kind of a comic book is that? Is that bona fide? Let me see. Mahabharata. That's all right. Can you read it? So I thought I could try to answer some questions. And I was thinking how some of you may think, well, I definitely have questions, but I'm not going to ask them in a group. I have a personal question. So that's understandable. And I can try to answer those questions privately by mail, by letter. But there's also an art of framing a personal question in a way that you don't have to be embarrassed of it, and that it's more philosophically stated. So that I can try to, it's a good discipline for you too, to try to think of a question you have, which may be filled with all kinds of particulars, but if you think about it, well, it's actually a case of my not being able to get along with another devotee, or it's a case of my not being able to tolerate something or other. You can ask the question like that and try to help in general, and it can help other people too. But I have a question to start with. which I hope will be, I hope questions are of interest to you and useful to you, not just exercises. Thanks. We see that devotees chant Hare Krishna and follow the process as set up by Prabhupada year after year. After year. In the scriptures it is said that chanting Hare Krishna once can eradicate more sins than one can commit. The more we practice, the more our taste is supposed to increase. The more purified and therefore more absorbed and satisfied we should become in the simple execution of Krishna consciousness. Desires should leave us. Our lower mode tendencies should gradually disappear. Even mechanically following the process year after year should purify us and make us Krishna conscious. So, why aren't devotees, after years of practice, conquering over their lower natures and developing into ideal Vaishnavas? Why are so many devotees leaving Krishna consciousness and diving into Maya after having practiced Krishna consciousness regularly for years? Why aren't devotees satisfied and happy in simple devotional service? Why haven't we become purified? There are a lot of questions and doubts in there, and description of actual phenomena. One consideration is that one thing that thought that this brings out is that it's not so easy to get out of this material world and to conquer these desires. In other words, there's a lurking doubt behind this question that perhaps the process doesn't work, although it's advertised that it works in the scriptures. But that's a faithless attitude to take. We have to, if the scriptures say that by one's chanting or by practicing Krishna consciousness we become purified, we have to accept that as axiomatic. And then we can still ask the question, but why don't we? Why are devotees leaving? And so on. So we may have thought that it was a very easy job. As far as this once chanting, but if you negate it at every moment, you chant and then you immediately have more material desires and material activities. Then Prabhupada said it's like trying to build a fire and simultaneously throwing water on it. It's not the fault of the fire that it's not going nicely. So the real problem is that this material disease is deep-rooted, the material world is a very dangerous place. And so we may have thought that the whole group was going to become all very completely highest level of devotees overnight, and certainly ourselves, and it's not happening. It may take lifetimes before we become completely free to go back to Godhead. One of the first times that a member of Krishna Conscious Movement left, Prabhupada stated that it's not wonderful, amazing, that they left, but the amazing thing is that some of us stay, despite the maya. Bhakti Sananda Saraswati Thakur said, some of the soldiers will fall in this battle with maya. But it's not amazing, or it's not bewildering, or it's not a cause of doubt on the philosophy and the process to see soldiers fall. And to see ourselves not as developed as we thought we might be. And to expect to come back again. Rather to pray to again be a devotee in the next life. So if we're talking like bewilderment that 10, 20 years have gone by and there hasn't been a complete freedom of material desires. What's 20 years? We've been 20,000 species of life cultivating the material side. And so we're slow to do it. Slow to take to it. Now, speaking of the Shastric statements that tell us how favorable it is to practice Krishna consciousness, some of them also take into account the fact that people take to it and don't succeed. For example, that question is brought up by Arjuna to Krishna. Very practical. Well, what if I take to Krishna consciousness with a thorough commitment, giving up my material desires and style of life, but I don't succeed spiritually completely for going back to Godhead, and then I won't be a material success either. You know the question, the sixth chapter of Bhagavad Gita. So there, that very psychology of, you could say, doubt and taking to the process and what may happen to a person is addressed by Krishna. And Krishna doesn't say, oh, don't worry, Arjuna, that will never happen. No one ever falls down, and so there's nothing to worry about. Right? You'll very quickly come. You, meaning any conditioned soul, will not have any problem. No, Krishna says, those who don't complete it, yoga brashta, they come back favorable next life and a better birth. But Krishna doesn't force us, and so he describes this, but there's always the positive hope that we're making progress, that whatever we do is towards becoming completely pure. We can become completely pure in one lifetime. We're asked to do that, give up your business in this material life, but it's up to us. And if we don't, we make great advancement. If we don't completely purify ourselves, still we make great advancement. And if in the face of this being more difficult than we thought it was, we decide to give the whole thing up, then we're faced with the horrible proposition of falling down in the species and suffering and hellish torments and everything. So even if you think of it like a kind of a gamble, or it is a risk, well, I don't know, I can't get guarantee beforehand that if I do this, I'm definitely going to go back to Godhead. Still, it's the safest way to go, the safest way to commit your human life is to make as much progress as you can in Krishna consciousness. But this other possible alternative that's suggested in the doubt that, well, if so many people don't make it, maybe right now I should decide just what? to dive into material life like others, to not practice seriously? No, all the more reason to put all my effort into it if it's so difficult to overcome my... this is not a good attitude to see the difficulty devotees are having and then calculate that because it's difficult, I'll take it easy. That doesn't make sense. That is the dictation of Maya. Maya, whose job it is to keep us in this material world, not let us out, will consider that a victorious interpretation on her part into the brain of a devotee. So, another verse where the lack of taste is described, the famous verse in the Nectar of Instruction. The holy name, character, pastimes, and activities of Krishna are all transcendentally sweet like sugar candy. Although the tongue of one afflicted by the jaundice of avidya, ignorance, cannot taste anything sweet, it is wonderful that simply by carefully chanting these sweet names every day, a natural relish awakens within his tongue and his disease is gradually destroyed at the root. So everything is accounted for here. The blissful nature of chanting Hare Krishna and the state of somebody who doesn't feel that when he chants Hare Krishna and why the person feels that way. Why does a person not feel the bliss of by chanting and hearing? Because he's not practicing it right. He's practicing it, like Lord Chaitanya says, you're fully available in your holy name, but I commit offenses, and therefore I don't have a taste for it. And another thing is, let's say, count your blessings. Although we would like much more taste than we have, we do have some taste, and we do have some attraction to Krishna consciousness. We shouldn't be critical on ourselves to the point of thinking that there's no gain. So. No attraction. One way that attraction can be felt is if you are suddenly put into some sharp contrast or comparisons, like sometimes you go and you visit some old friends or you visit your parents who are completely not Krishna conscious and are doing all kinds of non-devotional things. Or any kind of exposure like that with the non-devotees gives you a real taste by contrast of, oh, Krishna consciousness is so nice, sublime, and you want to cling to the chanting of Hare Krishna as your protection rather than criticize others or your own imperfection. In other words, if it's about to be taken away, what you have, you see, it's not inconsequential. It's your best thing you have. And as to the fact that we see many devotees like going out, oh, I don't like Krishna consciousness anymore. That shouldn't develop doubt or weakness or, as I say, make us think that it's not worth working hard just because they left. But it should make us struggle harder. Yes, what it does imply that devotee worked so hard, was so sincere, and still left, so it implies that will happen to you and I. We don't say that that's not the implication. As such as a devotee who did a lot of service still left, yes, that means that I may live. But what does that do to you when you see that? It should make you think, well, I know the way not to leave. That person committed some kind of fault, anartha, although they were so strong, and it cut down their creeper of devotional service. So I should be very careful and not commit offenses and try to rectify them. To be a little scared is good. I'm scared of Maya. Afraid of Maya. That's a way to look at the departure of many devotees in a way to make us even more determined. Survive. Then we'll place a value just on survival. We're thinking, well, when am I going to become a pure devotee? And then we'll be thinking, well, maybe that's not attainable, but I definitely don't want to leave Krishna consciousness. I want to survive. Take a humble estimation of what we want to achieve. Questions or comments about that, or any questions they want to discuss? Yeah.
So sometimes, you know, because your sadhana is not very good, your japa is not very good, and these ways of what you read does not overcome you. So even though you're aware of the fact that your japa is not very strong, you're not reading very, how do you actually pull yourself out of reading? Because you already know what's wrong, but at those moments sometimes the waves are very strong.
Yeah.
And instead of sleeping after the sleeping shelter, you better job for reading.
Well, that's what you have to do. And not be embarrassed that you've done this many, many times. You've seen your bad tendencies and you've gone on some little attempt to improve it, and it improved for a while, and then you lost that improvement. So every time that happens, you have to just do it again, and not think, "Oh, this is embarrassing." So many times I've tried to improve, and I did improve, but then it didn't amount to anything after a while. But you have to do it again. It's like the mind in yoga, and this is also bhakti yoga. Krishna says, "Wherever the mind goes, bring it back under the control of the higher self." So that has to be done again and again. And you have to be ready for that. It's like, where's your daughter? Right now, she went out. So say she's with you and you have to check her for her safety or her right behavior 10 times in a minute. And then if she does again something to endanger herself, you don't think, well, what's the use? I've already tried to check her 10 times. You really have to do it again, or else it could be very bad. So you're resigned to that. That's your service. And it would be very nice if she starts developing some discipline or better behavior. But your service is to try to keep protecting. So, similarly, the answer is, if you have bad japa, then once again, do some things. Associate, find some devotees who you can really make that part of your relationship with instead of prajalpa. And that they may make some suggestions. You're reading the books about how to improve japa, and so are they. They may say something to you that helps you. Or something about your personal life that they notice that, well, I noticed it. That when you chant, you do this, why don't you try this? And we could read together, or why don't you read at this time? So a friend can help, or your husband and wife could help, or guru can help. Help yourself. And as we are willing to do this every moment with the mind, We have to keep making these campaigns. What is that expression? I think I've mentioned this before. There's a description of one great poet. He described poetry or writing as a raid on the inarticulate, meaning that until literature is written, there is no literature, it's just inarticulate. And then someone writes a beautiful book, so things are articulated. But despite that book, there's still a sea of ignorance and things not being said nicely. So, in a sense, like any writer, what work he can do is just a tiny little contribution to culture. And generally you have the tendency of non-culture or chaos. So one has to be willing to make another raid on the inarticulate, which even after you raid it will remain a mass of ignorance. But one learns to like to do that and practices it. So you have to be like that. Really, you have to be very flexible people who are really willing to try again and again, not easily disappointed. Prabhupada, like in his preaching, he was never disappointed. Although, of course, you could say, well, he got such wonderful encouragement, but he got a lot of disappointment also, compared to what he hoped would happen or knew was needed for Krishna consciousness in the world. He often used to say, nobody comes here, just a few of you are here. But he wasn't disappointed, so. You have to keep trying. And if nothing else, at least it won't be getting worse and worse, or you won't forget about it. At least you're thinking, my japa isn't so good, I don't read attentively. There's some signs of life there at least. And then you can keep putting together good, like winning streaks of doing better, and then not doing so good, then doing better. And eventually your performance will be better. What else can we do except try and pray to Krishna to give us some lasting improvement? That's our life. And we should keep doing it until the end of our life. What else can we possibly do? You can't say, well, I'll try for 3 more years. If at the end of 3 years I'm still in this syndrome of trying to improve and falling back, then what will you do? You'll quit totally? Or what can you do? That's up to Krishna what will actually happen. But we have to just keep trying and trying and trying. There's no limit or condition that we're going to put on it. And that will be noted in Krishna's book, that this devotee never gave up and was always trying to improve, although he or she had so many bad habits, mental habits. And it's not a futile thing. Actually, it will. The taste does come, and the appreciation does come. And, contrary to this proposal, it says, why aren't devotees developing into ideal Vaishnavas? Well, they are also. It's good, there are good signs. There are many sincere devotees in the Krishna conscious movement in different places, who are setting very good examples, if we can open our eyes, of simple service, austerities, purities, feeling and taste, absorbed in the pastimes of Krishna. Transformation is taking place. Developing humility. make a new program, get a new notebook, a new study notebook, and sharpen up a new pencil, and whatever it is, start off again. And Krishna says, Nehabi kama nastosi pratyabhaya anavijite sotamapi asyadamasya chayate matobaya. Even a little bit that you do, it'll never suffer loss or diminution. I'll always remember it, and it can save you from the greatest danger at death. That's another thing. We're talking about our perception of this, but Krishna's perception is not seen by us exactly. So all these little acts of sincerity and tolerance and everything, they're all noted by Krishna, so you can be assured of that. Kali Yuga products. You hear about these sages who do austerities for hundreds of years and thousands of years, many lifetimes. But we're still in this age of wanting some immediate results. Brahma had to meditate 100 years of his time. How long have we been doing it? How sincerely, how hard have we been working? In this family of Krishna, hearing, trying to serve, where every attempt is appreciated by Krishna. It's a fact, though, what you say, that no one did come. And until Prabhupada came, there was no real spiritual knowledge that you're not this body, that you're transmigrating the different species, and that you should chant holy names. We can see who did come from the East and what they did bring and see what it lacked. But I think your question really is, why didn't the Supreme Lord arrange for it earlier, you could say. But didn't. But now he has, that's the main thing. The appearance of Prabhupada, the Vaishnava teachings now, Western all over. Yes, it's a remarkable thing, and that one quote is sometimes given by that one Professor Basham, who said this is one of the most significant things of in the modern age, that the I forget how he put it exactly, like that, the first time this has come from the East, or from a whole spiritual culture. It's a significant event in world history, certainly. But as to why, he didn't deserve it. He didn't want it. Anybody have it? Yes.
I'm going back to the last. I'm trying to ask myself to go back to the last. So in Vrindavan, or even in India, sure, in Vrindavan, there is a small shop. There is the devotees, and every day there is the festival.
I can answer in a personal way that and also if possible you can plan to come back because you may need to come back again for more after you wear down the good impressions that you got. If any travel is worth saving for and planning for, it's this travel. Sometimes other ISKCON devotees or Hare Krishna devotees in the West, they may see the devotees' desire to come back to Vrindavan and the Dhams as like a material thing. But it's not. It's a spiritual thing if one can see or feel that by coming here you get revived and strengthened and you can go back. So I partly say that because it may be that all the good things you feel, you will feel them not as strong when you go back after a while. But another thing is, so you're saying, well, what should I bring back? So you should try to focus then on some kind of personal development, or to put it another way, like some answers to some questions and solution to some problem. That when you left India and you came for India and you came here, some of the things that were particularly bothering you, or you didn't even know they were bothering you, but they came out when you got here. So you should taking stock of that. We shouldn't think that we're not pilgrims. We're also like people who come here to try to become purified. We don't have to find a guru. We don't have to find the deity. We know the deity. We know the guru. We know where to go. But still, we're coming to try to find out how we can improve ourselves and please Krishna and please guru. And as you say, here it's easier to do. It seems that Krishna is much more accessible. So then try to actually make, I won't say make a theme, but see what the theme is of your pilgrimage. What's going on within you? What decision can you make? What change can you make? And then when you get that, some inkling of that, then that's what you want to bring back. And say, all right, so this is what I should do, or this is what Krishna wants me to do. I'm so grateful that in Vrindavan I realized this. Now let me bring this back. So that's a personal answer. You said, should I bring back the missionary spirit? Should I bring back the appreciation that we're not just a tiny cult in the West surrounded by alien forces, but we do belong to a culture, and it's there still in India. Well, all these are things that you can bring back. But you have to make them personally meaningful to you. They're not just abstractions. Like we were talking in the class this morning about theory and realization. So we hope that everyone does get some kind of personal realization for their life and they can bring that back. Or several or many realizations. Does that make sense? Yeah. We're all individuals, so... And Krishna is... He speaks to us individually, or we gain our individual realizations. Some people do better than others in this process of coming to get purified. Some people go back and within minutes they think, oh, it's all gone. Some people can keep something in within them that was valuable. And although externally the places are very different, still, by Prabhupada's grace, Lord Chaitanya's mercy, all the practices of Krishna consciousness are there. You're not just going back to Vancouver, British Columbia, you're going to the ISKCON, or you're going to Prabhupada's books and your practice is there. I remember one year when I was in Vrindavan and Mayapur, or maybe just Vrindavan, and so the first places I hit, I remember, was Ireland. I went to Ireland, and it was like a culture shock after Vrindavan, seeing the western city, and I thought, oh, what a horrible place. Why do I have to be here? And then the one thing that stood out was the preaching opportunity of that place. And that was the only reason to be there from a devotee's point of view. And so, especially if somehow you feel like that, or you've made a commitment for a Prabhudatta Desh, or at least some serious commitment to preach, say in the West, and then you go back, but you see all the unpalatable features of it, then you think, there's only one reason to be here, and that's to try to give Krishna consciousness to others. And that that advantage is there. That the field is there and that there's an opportunity to spread Krishna consciousness. So that would be a nice way to do it too. And that's sort of the traditional pattern, which Prabhupada also I remember once, one morning, he was here, we walked, it was near the end of the festival. You know, Prabhupada would go to Mayapur, and everyone would go to Mayapur, hundreds of devotees. Then the festival would move here, and everybody would come here. So it was in 74, and we were at the very end of the festival, and the buses and everything were getting ready to bring people back to the west. In fact, it was the last morning walk with Prabhupada. Dozens of devotees were with him. So I mentioned that this is the, I said, Prabhupada, this is the last day that the festival is over, because Prabhupada wasn't going back. This is the last day devotees are going back. And he said something, I can't remember exactly, although I think I wrote it down somewhere in one of those books. But he said something to that effect. This, I think right in the bookshelf down there towards the bottom there's a Life of the Perfect Master. I wrote it there. But that's the standard idea, is that you come here, get spiritually enlivened by the intimacy and with Krishna, and then go back strong and preach. Let's see, I think I recorded that. Prabhupada Vrindavan. Has some good quotes about Vrindavan. If you want to know some things Prabhupada said about Vrindavan, it's good. Don't be an offender in the Dham. So I was saying, it's a personalized thing. There may be like a special thing that you have to understand in Vrindavan each time you come. But that general pattern, for which, in a sense, Prabhupada set up the temple here, is that people would come from all over the world and benefit and then go back. In other words, you're meant to go back. So you're meant to come here and you're meant to go back for worldwide preaching. What was that one letter? Vrindavan is inspiration only. We are interested in worldwide preaching. Because Vrindavan is preaching also. For some devotees, it's their Prabhudatta Desh. They're very fortunate. But for the visitors, they're meant to come and behave in such a way to get full benefit and then go back. So your question is a good one. Think about it. And if Krishna doesn't tell you something earth-shaking, then that's also part of it. Like there's always something to be learned, and more. There's always some more dirt to be washed away, it seems. Prabhupada left Vrindavan for that purpose, to tell others about Vrindavan. Thank you.
even chanting the rupas.
Yeah. Yeah, because the free will is the basis of bhakti yoga. So if you think like that, that I want to do something for Krishna, this is what I want to do, and then it's confirmed, that's good. It seems like, especially in the beginning, there's less of that, and the guru just tells the disciple, do this and do that and do this, like the parent tells the child, and then the child grows up more, and then by the good training, by the awakening of maturing consciousness, the grown-up disciple says, I understand, now I want to do this, I want to do this for you. So there's more free will. Talking of these, like, these deep anarthas and these last things that make us still morose, attached to the material body, material desires, some of those are deep and they can't be plucked out overnight. And as we note, we see some devotees, after practicing Krishna consciousness, they never did pluck them all out, and they finally succumb, going back to material activity. So, although it's free will that we're looking for, we want to use our free will, we're not always sure how to do that. So that it's really what Krishna wants us to do. So we have to keep being alert about that. Keep in the association of devotees, and keep hearing from the Shastras and from the Guru. Regular process. Never saying now we're perfect, now we know everything. You're never saying now I give up, but always regularly serving, chanting and hearing, trying to get the right insights. So even while we're imperfect, we're rendering service. Years go by, and we've rendered some service, and we keep rendering more service. So even though we're not a perfect instrument, we're not just waiting to start doing some service, but we're doing service and developing more. But that ultimate stage is where a devotee who really just wants to do what Krishna wants to do and knows what Krishna wants and does it and gets the greatest personal satisfaction out of it. Until we reach that stage, there's just some kind of impurities and different motives and designations involved, but still our service is acceptable to Krishna. like you may or I may decide something right now in Vrindavan, that this is what I want to do for Krishna, I'm going to use my free will in this way. Well, there may be some imperfection there. We want to do it partly, we want to become famous or something. But by doing it, by engaging our tendency, we'll become more purified. In the purest stage, there's no doubt that one is doing what Krishna wants, and only because it's pleasing to Krishna. Prabhupada and Lord Chaitanya, they're very kind, they encourage us to serve immediately. As we keep coming to Vrindavan, or even if you can't come, like some great devotees never came, but we keep serving Krishna, then we'll feel more and more at least natural in being Krishna conscious devotee, and the other will seem very unnatural. We'll become safer and safer. When I was talking this morning, I was in the class, I was trying to think of some examples that they have given us, the sages and the scriptures, to describe the realized state. Although you can't know it until you get there. I gave an example that it's like a traveler finally returning home after all the strange places and the ordeals he had to go through. He comes to his beloved abode, and he knows his place already, he loves his place. There's a familiarity and happiness. So that's like a real hint where even someone who's not completely realized can get an idea. Another example, though, I thought of later, is an even more standard example Prabhupada gave. He said that when you're Krishna conscious, it's not that someone has to give you a certificate that says that you, so-and-so das, now you're Krishna conscious, and then you know it because that person gives it to you. He said, but you know it within yourself. Just like a hungry person, when he eats, he knows. And it's not that another person, while you're eating, his telling you is the way you know. He said, you're feeling satisfied? Yes, you know that yourself. So that example was given. That's how you know you're Krishna conscious. And no one has to tell you. You'll feel that self-satisfaction. Another symptom is pleasure or liking it, that you like it. When you like to hear the pastimes of Krishna. That's all. You like kirtan, you like the deity, you like serving. Because it's not that we're going to reach a stage where we know Krishna completely. But liking, that's it. That's the realized state. And the more and more you like it. You say, well, I don't know so much about it, but I really like it. Mode of goodness. Yeah. Oh yeah, detachment from the lower mode has to come. That expression, finish up your business, meaning all the things that you thought you had to do in the material world, you should finish them up. Especially the material so-called duties. And finish up all the advancement that you have to do and get out, go back to Godhead. So in that, to take that phrase, finish up your business, as we get some realization, some of the business starts to get finished. That well, I don't want that anymore. I've had that particular kind of sense gratification, or sex life, or intoxication. I'm finished with that. I don't want that anymore. So it's actually, and then different areas, the work starts getting. We see stages of completion. Business starts getting finished up, and then we should still be able to see where there's a mountain of work left. Yeah, that business is finished. This business I still have to do. So realization can be judged by our actually finishing up business once and for all. Oh, I thought it was even better. Nobody's here.
Oh, it's nice. Because we're always here.
Then you have the fortunate task of actually trying to find out what's the real Vrindavan. I remember I let some of my friends here know that I was coming to teach this course, and someone said, well, try to come a few weeks earlier, because once all the devotees come, it's the main thing that's going on is the association of all the devotees. It's very intense. And the actual Vrindavan sort of still there, but it sort of it takes a background. If you want to experience Vrindavan more like it is, try to come a little early. And even I, as a visitor, I experienced that. By visiting before most people came, it was different than it is now. Now there's a lot more opportunity for association with devotees from all over the world, and less opportunity maybe for taking your time in Vrindavan. And becoming closer to the real Vrindavan. So what may seem to you, when there's no exciting thing going on, is like boredom and the same old thing, or and it can be like that, and you can commit offenses, but it's the time of opportunity for what we don't have in the West in our permanent places. We have to always remain on guard from our surroundings, but you can try to actually learn what it is to live in Vrindavan and find out more all kinds of subtle appreciations. But you have to be on your guard too, because Prabhupada said the offenses are counted here 100 times more, and so are the auspicious activities. And of course, we have duties, whether we're in Vrindavan or New York City. So just prosecute your duties, whether there's a festival or not. Partly it has to do with different kinds of people. I like it more when there's no festivals. When the devotees asked me that question, I often think like that. Someone was saying, you know, well, it's so exciting now having this marathon and doing the Rath Yatra, but how can we be enthusiastic afterwards? And I think, well, it's nicer afterwards instead of all this. I know one of the, Burijan used to tell me, he had the Gurukul at Gita Nagari. He said the best time is the most uneventful. He said that's the best for the students. It's not like this festival and that festival, but it's, you know, very uneventful, because then they keep going to the class and learning day after day and do your real work without distractions. So I don't say festivals are distractions, but you have some regular service, so perhaps you can really pay attention to perfecting it when there's not other exciting things happening, as well as noticing more, since you're in Vrindavan, that it's always special. You're fortunate, you can really get to see. After all, if we're only here for a month or so, we remain like tourists. But if you really live here through the different seasons and everything, it can really become like your home, and that's a very fortunate thing, a fortunate attachment. So we have to pray to Krishna not to become contemptuous. And to do your service. If you don't have service in Vrindavan, then it's a devil's workshop also. You like the festival, but don't you also a little bit looking forward to when it's over?
No, I just feel like when the devotees come, I have time to read.
Then you have time when they come?
The devotees that come, but when you live here out here, you don't really, because you have your service all the time.
You don't use Vrindavan the way they do.
Yeah.
It's a real special treat for the devotees to come and chant and read. But for you, it's where you always are. Well, you should have sadhana too. Yeah, well, you're in the predicament like the devotee. Some authority, a temple authority, wrote me a letter about it. A devotee has come here to Vrindavan for a spiritual holiday. So we hope this devotee will come back to do the service again. So that's sort of the attitude.